2022 was the year that Roe versus Wade was overturned, but 2024 might have even more profound impacts on life in America. Stay tuned. Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Pro-Life Guys podcast, a show dedicated to equipping you with the tools that you need to have compassionate and compelling conversations about abortion so that together we can change minds, save lives, and transform our culture. My name is Cam. I am the host of the show. Thank you to all of you who are tuning in, whether it's your first time or whether you've been a longtime listener. I really appreciate you being along for the ride. If you would be so kind as to give us a like, give us a review, give us a share. We are getting dangerously close to 800 YouTube subscribers. We'd love to hit that mark as soon as we possibly can. So find us on YouTube, link in the show notes below. This is a bonus episode talking about what's going on south of the Canadian border, our friends to the south in America. And in particular, a number of the referendums that have amendments up for review and vote on reforming or radically, chaotically, tragically changing state constitutions to enshrine abortion rights and abortion access within the state constitution. And I am joined by longtime friend and mentor and leader in the pro-life movement, Mark Harrington from Created Equal. He's been on the show before. He is just a fountain of wisdom and experience and knowledge. I appreciate him for all the work that he does at Created Equal. He was one of the guys that trained me way back when during my first Florida. At the time, we were still doing the Genocide Awareness Project. Way back when in 2011 is when I met him and his colleague Seth. Phenomenal dudes and doing great work down there. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Mark Harrington from Created Equal, all about Amendment 4 in Florida and the greater pro-life movement and the absolute opportunity and chaotic crisis that American voters are dealing with in the year 2024 here. All right, folks. Mark Harrington back in the podcast. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. I feel like I should have had you on a dozen times this year already. I feel like there's still enough pro-lifers here in Canada that look at 2022 as the solution to the abortion crisis in America and not nearly enough looking at how pivotal 2024 is going to be. I know that you had an episode on earlier this year that I'm going to link in the show notes below, but tell me a little bit about how 2024 has been shaping up for you guys. It's one of the busiest and pivotal years probably in some ways in American history, I guess.
Absolutely. I would call it the mother of all battles because there are possibly up to 10 of these constitutional amendments that will be on the ballot in various states. And of course, the crown jewel of the abortion industry would be Florida. And that's because it's a 60% threshold in order to put that into the Florida Constitution. So, you know, after the overturning of Roe versus Wade, we saw Ohio fall last year. We've seen Kansas, we've seen Kentucky fall, other states which were already very pro-abortion up to the very moment of birth. That was Vermont and California. I don't really count those. But if you want to count them all together, we're 0 for 7 right now. And hopefully we're going to pull one off here at least this time around.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I was talking to you off air. We're going to do this a little bit backwards. I feel like I'm prone to getting into all of the weeds and whatnot and then doing the call to action at the end. Let's talk about Florida. Let's talk about what's going on in Florida. And hopefully this can be a small part of a rallying cry to get a bunch of people together to try to make sure that that crown jewel that you mentioned doesn't fall the way of the abortion supporters. What's going on in Florida and what do we need to know about it?
Well, Florida, as you know, is a battleground state for the presidency, always is, although Donald Trump has carried it in the last two election cycles. He's probably going to win it this time. We have Ron DeSantis as the governor, who's very pro-life, as you know, outspoken. He's been very vocal in his opposition to Amendment 4. So we have a lot going for us there. On the flip of that, the pro-abortion people have been on the ground working for almost a year. They've outraised us almost 2-1, which isn't unusual. We're seeing that in most of these states. So we're going to get outspent. It always happens that way. But we do have some things going for us. President Trump did come out and say he was going to vote against the amendment about a week ago, which can only help. So I say it's the crown jewel for the pro-abortion people because it's a 60% threshold where all the others are 50% plus one vote. And so if they were to win there, I mean, they could stake their claim that they're going to win all of these. And it would really be, it would, I wouldn't call it a death blow to the pro-life movement, but it would certainly be a punch to the gut. And you, like I said, we're already 0-for-8. We can't go for 0-for-9 this year. And it's just, it would be devastating for morale. Obviously, the babies that would be killed if Florida went that direction, because it would become a destination state. I don't even want to go there in my mind. So we're fighting as best we can, as far as we can, to create it equal. Yeah,
absolutely. And we're going to dive into some of the lessons that you guys learned in Ohio and in some of these other states that we weren't able to win, obviously. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, so I know that you guys are working on a trip. I know that there's a whole number of campaigns, I'm sure, in mm-hmm. coordination with each other, but I'm sure there's some local pro-life groups that are doing their own gigs as well. If we were to put an eye towards what people can do, a lot of people in the pro-life movement, whether in Canada, where I'm at, or in America, or anywhere around the world, and they say, hey, I want to do something to try mm-hmm. to prevent this from happening. I want to act. Is this something that, unless you're involved in politics in Florida, you basically sit on the sidelines? What are maybe two or three things that people could do, whether in the state of Florida or outside of the state of Florida, that they could actually contribute towards holding back the tides here?
Right. So there are two campaigns that they can go on their website and they can sign up to Phone Bank. And you can do that anywhere in the world, by the way. We had people from all over the world actually weighing in on the Ohio issue last year. So they can phone bank whether they live in the United States or anywhere else. That's number one. But if they live in Florida or they can make their way to Florida, they have begun their door-to-door canvassing, right? And you just go to one of the two websites. The first one is donoharmflorida.org, I believe. And the other one is voteno4fl.org. Those are the two main campaigns or coalitions, if you will, that are operating in Florida. And they'll plug in for phone banking or door knocking. Those are really the two ways we can get involved in the grassroots. Obviously, you can support them financially. That's important as well. But those are the two main ways that we can get out. We can't beat them, you know, $1 to dollar, bottom line. But we can beat them when it comes to the grassroots. And that means hitting doors and making phone calls. It's old school stuff, but that's how you win elections.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll drop both of those in the show notes below, Mark. And maybe just a word towards door knocking and this phone calling, because I know that, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. You were one of the instrumental figures in getting me into this. And yet time and time again, as I'm sure that you see the same thing that I see, that the idea of door knocking is overwhelming for some people. And, oh, I don't want to be a door knocker. I barely want to be a phone caller kind of thing. What kind of words of encouragement? Because I tell everyone that door knocking is by far the most chill form of activism that I do.
Compared to holding abortion signs on college campuses, I would say so. You know, to me, it's just, you got to try it first. I mean, and the campaign, just as we did in Ohio, they'll train you. They're going to sit you down. They're going to walk you through how to, you know, go to the door, knock on the door, how to walk through the amendment with the red pen document, talking about the three main issues, expanding late-term abortion up to the very moment of birth, parental rights, which is, again, an issue in Florida, and health and safety regulations will be wiped out. That's the same with every one of these constitutional amendments, to be honest with you. And so we're also going to persuadable doors. What I mean by that is we're not going to hardcore pro-abortion people. They're not going to come our way anyway. We want to find those who are in the middle. That means that they're either pro-life, but they're just not really active, may not be thinking about voting on this issue, or they're marginally pro-choice, because those people can be persuaded as well by communicating that the amendment just goes way too far than current law in Florida. And once it's in the Constitution, there's no way to change it, really. I mean, there's just no way back. It's a one-size-fits-all. And it's just, there's no way, like if it were with the legislature, where you can have back and forth, give and take, nuance, you can change the law. You can't do that once it's in the Constitution. So that's kind of how it works. There's a script. Really, it's not as intimidating as people would think. You're not going to hostile territory here. Generally, these are persuadable voters.
Boom. So important. And ultimately, at the end of the day, we also have to ask, like, why are we doing this in the first place? Because of preborn children. right? And their families. I feel like that's the biggest thing. That's the reason why we both use abortion victim photography, especially when we're talking to pro-lifers. I get so many audiences initially who say, like, we don't need to see the abortion video. We don't need to see the images. We're already pro-life. And it's a matter of, okay, I'm not doubting your pro-life worldview. What I'm doubting at times, for myself included, is our conviction and willingness to do hard things to actually make things different. That door knocking is easier than you probably think it is, but it's also harder than watching an extra football game on a Friday night, because now the NFL is expanding into Friday nights. You know what? It's easier to just watch another football game or watch YouTube clips or whatever. I won't deny that. And yet we are talking about what could translate, I think, based on a lot of projections, of tens of thousands of lives every single year at minimum. And
absolutely.
So, yeah.
I mean, Florida, it would be a destination, and so would many of these other states if they go this direction. And that just leads to more babies dying. And we're all about reducing the body count, right? Yeah. Whether the law says one thing or the other, we're about saving lives too and changing hearts. But if we can reduce the numbers of abortions, that's really the goal, right? Overall, we want to make it unthinkable for sure. But eventually we do want to make it unlawful. And right now, that is the battleground. Florida's it.
Oh, absolutely. And that pincer tactic of getting abortion unpracticed at the end of the day, that a combination of unthinkable and illegal. Maybe from there, let's dive into some considerations, whether for Florida or whether for any of these other states that are facing these amendments. I know there's close to a dozen of them happening this year. And obviously, you were in the heart of the Ohio struggle and whatnot. Yes. And I'd love to pick your brain on some of the lessons that you and the team at Created Equal learned through that. Because while some of them that are the most important, I mean, the idea you obviously and ourselves here at CCPR were committed to cultural change, and how we've been winning political battles isn't the same as winning cultural battles, and the value of that. We might not have a tremendous amount of cultural runway before these amendments go in, but what are the major takeaways that you and the team at Created Equal and others in the pro-life movement have learned, whether from Ohio, whether from Michigan, whether from some of these other states where We lost, and at times we lost badly.
Yeah. Well, in America, and I don't think this is such the case in Canada so much, but we have been winning the battle politically over the last 50-some years until, believe it or not, when Roe versus Wade was overturned, which we all worked towards to happen. And when it did, that threw it back to the state legislatures and to the people to decide, for the most part. So we got what we wanted. But the fact of the matter is, we may have overturned Roe, but we didn't overturn abortion. And that means that the culture has not moved in our direction over that period of time. And we found that out, right, by these votes. People say, well, you know, they lie, they spend more money, all this is true. But the fact of the matter is, most Americans are not with us on our worldview. And that means we've got to change hearts and minds. Now, I understand in a political campaign, you have limited time and limited money, so you may not have time to make a full-throated defense of the unborn in order to win these amendments, but we cannot throw the babies under the bus. And I think, unfortunately, with a lot of these, and I would also say in Ohio, the coalition, unfortunately, tried to work on these, what you would call side issues, in order to move a point here, a point there, and it just wasn't enough. We got to make the main thing the main thing. And the main thing's abortion. It's child killing. And especially when you look at the late term abortion issue, which is a winning issue across the board. We can make it about that. And what that does, move the needle. And so that's why we in Ohio, through Created Equal, we ran a couple of ads on our own outside of the coalition, actually, that focused on the issue of late-term abortion. So the fact is that most of these coalitions in these states now even have not learned that lesson. And I'm afraid they're going to repeat the same results in some of these states. I hope it's not the case, but I've been speaking to all of them over the last year since we lost in November, trying to get the word out that this is what worked in Ohio, this is what didn't work. Don't repeat the same mistakes. Don't continue the same messaging and expect a different result. Unfortunately, we're seeing that with some of these coalitions, and I fear they're going to have the same result as we did in 2023. I hope it's not the case, but I don't think we can nuance our way or finesse our way to victory overall long term. We might win or eke out a victory here or there, but when it comes to the end game, which is to make abortion unthinkable in order to make it unlawful, you got to do the hard work. That is cultural change, which comes one person at a time.
Exactly. Exactly. Changing hearts and minds and helping them to know the real impact of these, what a lot of people perceive as theoretical or principle or philosophical ideas around abortion. No, we're talking about a human being. We're talking about a human being being ripped apart. And that is something that should be in the forefront of their mind as they go into these ballot boxes and not... I mean, obviously, our mutual friend Jonathan, and I know that you on the show as well, talk a lot about the difference between marketing and social reform and how we're not trying to sell memberships for our local pro-life entity. We're not trying to get more people at our chicken dinners kind of thing. We're trying to have people accurately informed as they walk into a ballot box. And at times, I mean, we all have a yearning and a hunger for acceptance. I like being liked, and I'm sure that you like being liked occasionally as well. And yet at the end of the day, that can't be the core message of something as direct as an abortion reform referendum.
Exactly. And as you know, our good friend and colleague, Greg Cunningham, used to say that social reformers are rarely liked. Effective social reformers are never liked. They're generally hated.
Yep.
But we would take the trade-off. I'd rather them hate me and hate abortion at the same time. And I think that is doable, actually. So we're not trying to win people to ourselves. We're not trying to win people to a message. We're actually trying to get them to reject abortion. And that's a wholly different way of going about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so bear that in mind when we look towards a state like Florida, is this winnable, I guess, in some ways? And not that if it wasn't winnable, we wouldn't bother putting any time or energy towards it. We still have lives on the line. We still need to act with defiance. But what are you hearing? What are you seeing with regards to Florida? Obviously, they have that higher threshold of 60% vote. I'm sure that this isn't in the bag for the pro-lifers any more than it might be in the bag for abortion advocates. But what are you seeing there? And what kind of considerations do we have to have regarding whether it's polling, whether it's what we're seeing, obviously having the state governor supporting the pro-life entity is going to be helpful, presumably. I don't know. I've read a lot of Donald Trump's statements about the six-week ban being too short of a time and muddying the waters around that. What are you hearing? What are you seeing about Florida in particular that is worthy of consideration, I guess, at this point?
Well, if you believe the polling, probably the best poll shows us at 58%, which would be below the 60%. Most of the polls that I've seen that seem the most reliable land around 62%. That means we've got a couple percentage points to move between now and November 5th. Early voting, I believe, is starting soon. If not, it's already begun in Florida. So the election day is now, I mean, to be honest. There's been polling up as high as 69%, actually. I think those are outliers, but I think we're somewhere in the low 60s, if you want to look at it that way. I don't trust the polls. I don't look at polls. If anything, that should I look at it just to, you know, understand it so I can talk to people. But when I see the polls that are not in our favor, it just makes me motivated more to do more. And I think we should just obviously get out and press the, get on the doors and make phone calls. So I think it's winnable. It's really important that we win this. And I exhort people to get involved with those two coalitions in Florida. And if you're in any one of these other states, there are coalitions set up to fight there as well. And it's worth it. I mean, win or lose, this is the battle right now. And we're not going to see this many constitutional amendments on the ballot again. This is going to be the most we're ever going to see probably forever, because they're either going to pass, and most of them might, probably will, or they're not, and then they're going to revisit these maybe in a couple of years. But within the next 5 years, this is all going to shake out in the United States. We're going to find out where these states land, and then we're done, because a lot of these states don't even have a mechanism to put an amendment on the Constitution. So we've got 9 or 10 of these this year, and that's why it's important that we all throw in right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, we're going to have those in the show notes below for anyone who's tuning in. I wanted to ask you maybe a couple of FAQ style questions, because again, in your article that I'll drop in the show notes of, you talk about how in Ohio, both the heartbeat bill as well as the quote unquote signature case, I mean, the abortion lobby loves to rally around these heart-wrenching cases, and often we as pro-lifers get caught with our pants down and aren't able to respond. And obviously in Ohio, there's a tragic case of a 10-year-old sexual assault victim. And we knew it was coming. We knew that this was going to be leveraged, just like, I mean, our friend again, Jonathan, wrote the book about the Irish pro-life movement and how we knew that Savita was coming. We knew that was going to be one of the signature rallying cries for the pro-abortion movement. What are we looking at with regards to the top talking points from the pro-abortion lobby in Florida? And what do people need to know about how to effectively and hopefully concisely respond to them so that this isn't a matter of pro-lifers getting caught with their tongues tied and not able to respond to the strongest and most common talking points from Florida?
Yeah, well, it's the same playbook they had in Ohio, and that is they attacked our six-week, or you want to call it the Heartbeat Protection Act. They're already running ads in Florida. I told them that would be what they would do right out of the gate. And they're basically saying, if you want to repeal the extreme abortion ban in Florida, vote yes on Amendment 4. And that was the same thing they said in Ohio on Issue 1. It is in effect in Florida. It has rape and incest exceptions, which Ohio did not, and I'm not for those, but it does sound a little more reasonable to the voter, right? I tell people that to not refer to it as a six-week abortion ban. Donald Trump does. Much of the pro-life movement does. It's not, actually. It's a heartbeat protection law, protects a baby at a detectable heartbeat. That can happen at 6 weeks. It can happen at 9, 10, 11, 12, and beyond. So we need to not refer to it as a six-week abortion ban. Yeah, but they lie, and they're going to lie about it. The truth of the matter is it passed the legislature overwhelmingly. Most Floridians are for it generally. But with all this fear-mongering, they basically make the case that this is taking away your freedom, right? And to keep government out of the bedroom and off your bodies. And that message still plays with voters, especially now in the United States, where a lot of Americans, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent, what have you, thinks the government is just too involved in our lives. So it's an easy message for them to make, honestly. And we need to push back with our best message. And that is that this law, this Constitution Amendment, would push abortion all the way up to the very moment of birth. That means 5, 6, 7 month old babies will be killed by abortion. Despite the fact that the other side thinks, says these don't happen, we know they do, right? We have all kinds of evidence that they do. And we have to be able to bring those stories up and the statistics about late-term abortion. I think that's our best comeback. It's kind of hard. You don't want to be playing defense, right? You don't want to be answering their best arguments all the time, but you got to have something there. You got to lead with your best argument, because we're not going to be able to answer everything they say in Ohio, in Florida, as we were unable to in Ohio. We got to lead with our best case.
Absolutely. And I mean, you're in such a different world than we are here, where, I mean, in Canada, when we're doing out our sidewalk displays and whatnot, and we've got 8 signs out there and 2 or 3 of them are later term abortions, and people are trying to call us crazy for thinking that abortions are happening and all this kind of stuff. This is exactly what people need. I'd be curious on how steady of a dose of late-term abortion considerations we need to have in Florida, because this is what they're voting for. They are, as much as they want to convince themselves that this is, like you said, a 6 week, and maybe I think that abortion should be allowed for a little bit longer than that, 8, 10, 12 weeks kind of thing. No. If you support this amendment, you are opening the door for this 24-week abortion victim to happen more frequently. You're opening the door for all of these kinds of things. And obviously the pro-abortion lobby is going to try to say that they only ever happen at that term when they have severe physical disabilities and all this kind of thing, which again, pro-lifers, we have a very long and very good response to that and all that kind of thing, but needing to keep things tight and needing to keep things clear and understandable for the voter, because while, like we said, we're both on the same page that we need to have very thorough and comprehensive answers at times, especially as we get closer and closer to this vote, we're going to need to keep things simple and clear and at the front of the voter's mind, obviously.
Agreed. And that's why, like I say, you know, create a couple of ads. They're going to do that, I hope. And I hope they go after late term abortion. Our ad is actually airing today. We raised money to put the ad that performed the best in Ohio. It was about late term abortion, and it showed Claire Caldwell, who was a victim of abortion. She survived, but her twin did not. It's an incredible story. She survived. Her twin did not. That ad in Ohio that we ran was the most effective ad in memorability and effectiveness in moving the needle. And so we raised some money and we're running that ad in Florida. I'm hoping that the coalitions down there do something similar, if not adopting our ad, because I think that's the one that moves the needle the most. So again, you got to make the main thing the main thing, because the other side is making it all about abortion. We lose credibility when we say, oh, no, it's not about abortion. It's about parental rights, or it's about parental consent, or it's about health and safety regulations. It may be about those things, too, but everybody knows it's about abortion and we need to take it head on.
Yeah, absolutely. As a quick thing, anyone who wants to help you guys run that ad even more, they can go onto your guys' website, presumably, and throw you guys some money to be able to get that in the pockets and laptops and whatever of people in Florida, presumably, fair to say?
Yeah, createdequal.org. It's going to be a streaming TV ad. It's not going to be broadcast television. That's hugely expensive. Yeah. It's also a very wide net. This is more precision. It targets persuadable voters on their tablets, on their smartphones, on their television sets through streaming TV. That's digital television. That is the wave of the future, by the way, and that's the way we're going about it. So we can reach the ones that need to be reached.
Absolutely. A couple more here for you, Mark. I love mining your brain on this. I'm sure that this, you might chuckle at this, I suppose, but before we dive into mobilizing the church and what charities need to know about how they can actually get involved in this, I feel like we have conversations in CSPR, I'm sure that you guys have them all the time as well, about how we got to be willing to make people uncomfortable. And our colleague that you mentioned earlier, Greg Cunningham, and the great quote about how Americans don't deserve a nice and easy day at the beach. I don't know the exact quote that he shared. I'm sure he's shared in a few ways. I feel like at times we are hesitant and reluctant and outright avoid big events, whether sporting events, whether big campaigns that we can make a difference, we can bring a display to, we can talk to people outside of a stadium, we can talk to people on their commute to work and away from work. And we convince ourselves we don't want to inconvenience people. People are here. They're trying to enjoy the day. They're trying to enjoy a football game. I don't want to bother them. I feel like conservatives are so polite and not wanting to bother people. And, oh, well, that person was, they were making dinner. I didn't want to talk to them about abortion right before they're making dinner. And all these considerations, I'm sure that it sounds absurd to you, but.
No, I hear that all the time. I just heard it today on campus.
Yeah.
Someone told me, why are you ruining people's day when they want to just go to class and learn and study. And I reminded them of the letter from the Birmingham jail that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Wrote. And he talked about creative tension. And he talked about bothering people, not just to be obnoxious, but to bother them, to get them to think. And that's what we do. We bother them enough to get them to think and say, hey, maybe I should revisit, maybe I should consider this and listen to what we have to say. It's a tactic. It's necessary to get those pictures in the minds of people, for sure. But there should be some tension. We're looking for that because that changes the way they might think. It gets them out of their comfort zone, because otherwise they just go on with their daily lives unaffected by abortion, because they'll never meet a victim. They just won't. So we have to bring those victims to them. So social reformers have always done this. We know this, right? Historically, we have the evidence. We have the polling. We've got the statistics that prove that this works. It is the most effective way to change hearts and minds. But even if it didn't, I'll be honest with you, the longer I do this, I'll continue to stand with the victims simply because I'm compelled to do so as a Christian, to share in their burden and thus fulfill the law of Christ, what the Bible says. So we need to identify with them and stand with them in solidarity. So the only way to do that is with the photograph, because they're no longer with us. So that's the case we make. I think it needs to be done in these states. Some of them are taking us up on that offer. As you know, we're heading off to Florida. We're going to be doing our thing down there. We're going to be doing door to door. Don't get me wrong, but we're also going to be flying our tow banners and driving our LED trucks. So, you know, we're going to be all out there for everybody to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And that note of solidarity and how important it is. And we have to accept that it's not as though the other side is not getting involved in the polite conversation and day-to-day activity. That's the burden that we have, that sure, they can go out there campaigning with smiles and pins and buttons and free condoms and the whole shebang and just make everyone feel good. That's the burden that we have, that we are the bearers of bad news. We are the bearers of... You know what? This is what these people should be handing out, because this is what they're selling you. This is what they are advocating for. Absolutely. Let's put a thought towards churches. And I'm sure that we could spend all afternoon talking about churches and some are doing a better job than others, obviously. And there aren't nearly enough doing what they could be doing. I feel like here in Canada, I'm sure that happens in the States as well. There's churches that are registered charities and other entities like that are concerned about weighing too heavily into the abortion topic because the political ramifications. All of the pro-abortion churches have no similar reservations whatsoever. The pro-abortion churches out there are putting everything they have towards this. What are churches and what are similar kind of charities, whether, I don't know, pregnancy care centers can get involved. I don't know about other mission groups and whatnot. Their hesitancy to get involved in a quote-unquote political matter like this, obviously right now it is a political matter because it's on the ballot. Right. What do they need to know about why they and their members can get involved?
Well, in the United States, we have what we call 501c3 organizations. Created Equal is one of those. That means that any donations are tax deductible. It also, according to the IRS, restricts us from what they call electioneering. In other words, Create Equal can't go out and tell people to vote for Donald Trump, for an example. However, we do have a lot of latitude when it comes to constitutional amendments and lobbying for, say, a bill in the State House or something like that. And not to get too technical here, but just FYI, in the United States, a 501c3 nonprofit can spend up to 10% of its proceeds, its resources, time, money, in direct lobbying for or against a constitutional amendment or any bill that might be put to the legislature or the U.S. Congress. So we're in the clear there. There's no excuses for nonprofits, whether they're pregnancy resource centers, pro-life organizations like Create Equal, or churches who are 501c3s, to tell their people to vote no on Amendment 4 if they're in Florida or if they're in any one of these states. They can tell them to do that, as, you know, officially coming from the church itself. So I don't buy it when pastors say, oh, well, we can't talk about politics. Legally, they can. That strips away that objection. To be honest with you, generally, it's just they're so risk averse and worried that they might lose people. They might lose people in the pews, which drains their coffers possibly and all that they're just afraid to. And that's a mistake, first of all, because there are women and men sitting in the pews that think that the abortion's the unforgivable sin because it's never brought up. And they live in shame and darkness. That's not the way to approach this as a pastor. Be straight and open about it. Know and teach that there's forgiveness through Jesus Christ, just like any other sin. But we ought to be openly talking about it in our churches. And we ought to be openly talking about this election, the amendments, and I would say the presidential election as well, because we've got a big one before us here in the United States. So politics is just where it happens to be right now as far as the battle goes. But pro-lifers, Christians, and pastors, we ought to go where the battle is, whether it's in the legal, whether it's in the businesses or what have you. That's where we have the debate. So we got to go where that debate is happening, and that's where it's happening. It's a political issue right now.
Yeah, It's happening. It was heartbreaking. I was speaking at a Baptist church in Florida in February when we were down there for our mission trip, doing some campus work, and speaking at a youth group at one of the churches. And I asked all the kids to close their eyes and put their hands up if they knew anybody in their school who had had an abortion. And all the hands went up. I asked them, keep their eyes closed. Do they know somebody in their church who had an abortion? Yeah, all the hands were up. And they might all be thinking of the same person. It's not a guarantee that they all know somebody different. But this is something that is impacting our churches profoundly. Not only people who have had abortions and repented of them, and it was decades in the past, but people and kids have them right now. And this is a consideration towards our kids, our grandkids, all those sorts of people that desperately need pro-lifers to take a stand and be bold and be willing to endure some small or maybe even large amount of persecution in defense of life, not only having the courage to vote pro-life and making sure that their vote actually gets counted, but trying to get other people to vote similarly, because we are going to be held in account for what we did to the least of these, our brethren, at the end of the day. And there's no getting away from that.
Yeah, and just in Ohio, the polling showed that 25% of evangelicals voted yes on issue one. Yeah. I mean, we are leaking voters. It's even worse with the Republican Party currently. About 30% voted yes on issue one. So even Trump voters, to be honest. So our people are not voting our way. And we've got a problem in our churches, in our own party, to convince people that this is something that they need to take a stand on.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other thoughts or considerations we should have towards churches before we start putting a bow on this and talking about why Florida in some ways is our Normandy and what the impact could be if we win this? Any other things we should talk about with regards to churches and getting our...
Well, it's interesting. During issue one, I was talking to pastors and I would just say to them, if you're not going to get involved now, when? When it's... we've got a constant... I mean, this is going to be cemented into our Constitution. Once it is, there isn't a whole lot that can be done politically. Now, it doesn't end the battle, of course. You know, I woke up the next day and went right back to work because we're about culture change here. But I would just exhort pastors, if they're listening or anywhere in the United States, that, you know, this is the issue. You're not going to get a do-over here. there is no second shot at it. You got one shot. And if you haven't spoken up for 52 years, here's your opportunity to do so.
Yeah. And there's help, there's support, not only in how to talk about it, but if you get blowback, if the media picks up your church as, look at these people who are talking out against this, and they try to do an attack on your church, if they try to do an attack on you and your family, whatever, there's support. There's people like yourself, Mark, who can help them with talking points and engagement factors. Obviously, there's
legal
support.
And the campaigns can as well. I mean, they have all those talking points, and they have great information for pastors and churches to be able to walk them through and activate their congregations to vote no on these amendments.
Yeah. As we start putting a bow on this, I want to talk a little bit about outcome sort of thing. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. We want to put the cart before the horse kind of thing. Mm-hmm. In Canada, we're dealing with a very different struggle and in some ways very different opportunity, in that I feel like people are more optimistic now in the pro-life movement than they have for a long time. There's a slowly building wave, and maybe this is just my own vantage point of where I'm at in my life kind of thing, but I feel like I'm talking to more and more people who were absolute stalwarts within the pro-life movement for a long time. They got beaten down over and over and over again, and to the point of giving up, and now they're seeing a growing generation of young people, and we're seeing it with our interns and whatnot, and there's an air of maybe this is worth getting back into the fray kind of thing. You talked off the top about how last year was 0-7 and this year has an opportunity to be 0-9. And that could be a massive blow to the pro-life movement. Obviously, there's people like you who are in this for the long run. And you know what, if we go 0-9, I'm anticipating that we're still going to hear the radio activist and we're still going to see amazing stuff coming out of Ohio and Created Equal. But this has got to be a daunting blow for a lot of pro-lifers when they're people who have been getting involved, or maybe they're getting to a breaking point of discouragement. Maybe again, really just point out how important it is to not go over our first 18 of these things. And then maybe let's talk a little bit about what could happen if we were to win, if we didn't go over, and maybe we're only going to win Florida, maybe we only win one or two more on top of that, but the impact that could have on America's pro-life movement in getting a little bit of encouragement for people that, you know, this isn't a foregone conclusion. This doesn't have to be a just our Christian duty kind of thing. Not that our Christian duty is insufficient to get us out and fight for them, even if we know that we're going to lose. But maybe a thought towards how discouraging this has been and can be, and also what this could mean if we were to pull this off.
Well, we got what we asked for. I mean, 52 years or 50 years it was to overturn Roe v. Wade. We all celebrated, created equal, yeah. Celebrated for one day. It seemed like our movement celebrated for an entire year, but we were at it for, you know, the next day we were at it right away. So we got what we asked for, and that is we wanted it brought back to the states. And now is the real hard work, right? And listen, this is a long struggle. Hopefully those people that are involved in it understand that. I've been at it for decades. I understand when I got in, I took the long view from the start. This is going to take time. As far as a movement goes, how long have we been at it? I mean, compare that to the anti-slavery movement and just racism in America or across the world. How many decades beyond that, even centuries of people fought for reforms and didn't see it until much later in the battle. So we're still in the early stages, friends, to be honest with you on this. And we got to keep that in perspective. Whether we win or lose politically this time around is not the point. The point is, are we adjusting our tactics for what we're seeing? And I'm hoping and beginning to see, actually, people are starting to come to us and say, hey, you know, we haven't been doing the work that's necessary to change hearts and minds, to change public opinion in order to change public policy. Can we learn from you? And so we're getting open minds to all of this all across America. I hope and pray it doesn't take defeats to do that. I'd rather us win and learn the lesson, but it doesn't often happen that way. So we may have to lose a few more in order for us to reevaluate the things that we're doing here. But in Ohio, I'll just say this, we're not discouraged. And, you know, initially we were, but we got right back at it. And I was reflecting on the words of Jesus the other day when he talked about his own life and how he, you know, how life comes out of death, right? In his own resurrection. And he said, unless a grain of wheat dies, it stays on its own. Okay. But it, when it dies, it bears much fruit. So sometimes it's necessary for certain things to die in order to bear fruit. And we're seeing that some of the messaging that we've been trying for 20, 30 years just isn't working. And it never was, really. But now we're finding out because people are voting based on that messaging. Politically, it was a lot easier to get these laws passed because we weren't dealing with a direct democracy like we are now. It was a representative government, and in that, our representatives were voting. Now it's just mob rule. It's not very difficult to manipulate enough people to vote a particular way. So I'm encouraged that we're seeing change in America, win or lose this time around. It's a long fight. We're in it for the long haul, and those who are serious about it are going to reevaluate their tactics and hopefully do much of what Create Equal does. So we're on the ground training people all across America to do what we're doing here. And I believe it's the most effective thing. The results bear out. I mean, the stats show it, all the anecdotal evidence. We're reaching young people, which is, of course, the next generation of leaders. And that's where we should be focusing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's put a bow on this, Mark. Couldn't recommend people to get plugged in with Create Equal enough. I love the work that you're doing with these different campaigns. We're going to post up a bunch of these links in the show notes. How do people hopefully listen to this and say, you know what, they're doing something right over at Create Equal. These guys know what they're talking about. They know how to make long-term change and not just a flash in the pan kind of thing. Where do people get involved? Do you guys have anything coming up specifically mm-hmm. that they can register for? That they can get both a balance of, or whether it's a balance or not, of training and experience, knocking on doors, talking to people on campuses and street corners. Where do people learn more and get involved?
Well, if you're in Canada, you need to just contact CCBR, Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, because you guys are doing incredible work in many ways, much better than what we're doing, to be honest. But we got a different battle down here than you guys do. But so in Canada, contact CCBR. In the U.S., Florida. We're going to be going down there from October 7th through 12th. And if people are interested in coming, I mean, we'll help and plug you in into the campaigns there in Florida. And there's two of them we can plug into. So we'll have a team on the ground. We'll be going door to door. We'll be using our LED trucks, our signs on street corners. We'll be going to college campuses, all of the things we typically do. We got a lot going in 2025, too, of course, with our Justice Ride, which is where we take, we load up charter bus full of young people, take them on the road during spring break in the other parts of the country and take them down to Florida, as you guys do, and take them right to the heart of the battle and right to where people are discussing abortion. So we have that coming up early in 2025. So people can get involved by going to createdequal.org. That's createdequal.org, or they can listen to my podcast by going to markharrington.org.
Phenomenal. Mark, you're the man. I appreciate you taking the time to join us and appreciate all the wisdom and experience and leadership that you're offering towards the global pro-life movement. All right. That was my conversation with Mark Harrington from Created Equal. He's the man. He is an absolute legend in the global pro-life movement. Can't thank him enough for joining the show. Do go to his website. Do go to our website. Do subscribe to the show, all that kind of thing. Check out his content over at Mark Harrington Show, Radio Activist. And consider getting involved in one of the two campaigns laid out in the show notes below. Whether you're phone calling, whether you're on the beat doing door knocking and street corner outreach, it can be intimidating. It can be hard, but preborn children and their families desperately need us. So please do that. Can't thank you enough for tuning in. May God bless you abundantly wherever you're at, however many hours are left in your day.